So today I'm going to read out some stuff by Thanachan Dun that's been translated and transcribed by Ajahn Chandoko some years ago. It's part of a collection put together called Kruba Ajahn. It's not publicly available unless you know someone. So here's Thanachan Dun. This talk is titled The Spirit of a Warrior. Ajahn Chandoko asks, Venerable Ajahn, how does one arouse the spirit of a Dhamma warrior? Thanachan Dun, a warrior? A warrior is one who battles to overcome his enemies. As monks, your enemy is kilesa. The kilesa is in your own heart. To generate the resolute faith that it takes to battle with kilesa, you have to regularly contemplate death, marnusati. When contemplating death, your heart awakens to the fact that this life of yours is not a sure thing. Regularly reflecting that your life is but a day and a night will arouse the warrior spirit. In the depth of your heart, imagine your death. Tonight is Wanpa, and at midnight you have to die. Convince yourself with mindfulness and wisdom until there's acceptance. When you lie down to rest at midnight, you will die. There's no tomorrow. You expire at midnight. What are you going to do? The spirit of a warrior is born. Once we're finished with this meeting, you definitely get out there on your jhangram path. For sure you wouldn't go read a book or listen to a tape. You definitely wouldn't do anything else but alternate sitting and walking meditation, because you're convinced you will die at the stroke of midnight. The warrior spirit is born. The past is gone, so there's nothing to worry about. Establish your mindfulness in the present. The future? Tomorrow doesn't exist, because we die tonight. Thoughts about tomorrow's meal and alms rounds and where we're going to go the day after next all vanish. Everything ends tonight. The mind won't be able to dwell on tomorrow. It's like throwing a tennis ball against a wall. When it hits the wall of midnight, it bounces back. Throwing the ball stands for your distracted thoughts concerned with the future. They just bounce back after hitting the wall of midnight. When attempts to think of the future are foiled, thoughts come to a halt. You can't dwell on anything that would happen after midnight. You can't think of tomorrow's alms round and an upcoming house invitation or the work projects that you were going to do. It all ends at midnight. The mind will stop in the present moment with sustained awareness. You sit and walk meditation without forgetting that you will die tonight. This is how you generate the spirit of a Dhamma warrior, the warrior that engages combat with the kilesas in his heart. Contemplating death is very helpful. It cuts off infatuation and delusion. It calms anger and sensual desire. What's the point in being greedy for sensual desire? What's the use of being angry when you know that you bite the dust tonight? You've got to purify your heart in time. If you contemplate death often, you won't become overly concerned with the future. Even if your thoughts proliferate a bit, you'll have the means to bring it back to the present. Everything that you've experienced in the past has vanished. Assess your heart. Since you're ordained, have the kilesas diminished or not? If the kilesas aren't diminishing in strength, aren't being abandoned, then this is just a waste of time. Sustaining awareness in your meditation brings up the faith to apply effort intensively. From now until midnight, you'll definitely go do sitting and walking meditation if you truly believe you'll die tonight. Do this every night. If it does happen that this night passes and tomorrow at 3 or 4 in the morning you open your eyes to discover that you're still alive, then again create the perception that you have merely one more day to live. Tonight at 10 or 11 o'clock, my life will cease. Today, I've got a day of life. If that's the reality, how are you going to spend your time? Hurry. From morning till 10 or 11 at night, just put effort into your meditation. Continuous effort. But you have to imagine death in a way that your heart sincerely believes. Even though it may not actually be true that you'll die tonight, this is a skillful means that we employ to startle the heart. It awakens the fear of imminent death. If you reach your hour of death unprepared because your meditation hasn't been sufficiently developed, you'll have no refuge to take shelter in. If mindfulness, samadhi, and wisdom have not yet been established in your heart, you'll have no refuge. So for the time remaining, it's imperative to practice intensively. The skillful means of contemplating death is key. It can uproot your attachment to your body. You have to find ways to achieve victory over the kilesas in your heart and mind. Don't allow them to persist in your consciousness. Don't hold on to and imprison them. Find ways to let them go and cleanse the heart. It's necessary to let go of those attachments. When kilesas do appear, clean them out. Wherever you go, you're shadowed by your kilesas. Wherever you are, the kilesas are there in your heart. Once this is understood, you incessantly generate mindfulness to care for and consistently look after your own heart. This is to put forth great effort. The more you do, the more you benefit. The sages of old lived simply, content with whatever they had. They'd go off to live in peaceful and secluded places to develop meditation. Slipping away into solitude, they were free from the disturbances of community life. They didn't socialize too much with the community. That's the way it was in the old days. That led to knowing and seeing Dhamma. These days, there are just a lot of issues, issues that aren't concerned with the Dhamma. So there's a lot of mental turmoil, and the results of Dhamma practice rarely arise. The results come too slowly because people prefer these worldly issues to the issues of Dhamma. As monks, we should practice in solitude, developing bhavana a great deal. Results will then be forthcoming. Focus on cultivating the goodness in yourself first until you can be your own refuge. You've heard enough of the Buddha's Dhamma and the teachings of the Kruba Ajahns concerning this path of practice. The question remaining is how much faith you have to intensify and tighten up your effort every day and night. Take a look at Lumpu Mahabua. Occasionally, in his early years, he'd be defeated by Kilesa. Kilesa would overcome his mind to the point that his samadhi waned in strength, but he vowed revenge. "You damn Kilesas, you want to fight, do you?" Talking to his Kilesas, he'd say, "You dirty bastards, I'm going to kick you out of my heart. One day you'll die in my hand. I'm going to wipe you out." Please excuse my language, but this was how Lumpu would speak of his defilements. He vowed revenge. "You damn Kilesas got the best of me. Because of you, my samadhi deteriorated. You caused me nothing but anguish." He was a fighter. His effort never retreated. "Damn it, Kilesas, you even brought tears to my eyes. But mark my words, I'm going to punch your lights out." Real meditators are willing to take it to this extent. Feud with Kilesas, but don't feud with your friends in the monastery. Don't feud with the lay people or anyone else. Feud with the sensual desire, anger, and delusion in your own heart. Take revenge on them. Scold them. Don't surrender. Don't buckle under. Rebuke yourself. Take the blame yourself. Admonish yourself rather than rejecting the blame on other people. Search for the faults in your own heart. Whenever harmful thoughts arise, find a way to defeat those Kilesas. That's how the Kruba Ajahns put forth effort. If Kilesas are still present, don't go getting involved in society. Find a way to slip off into solitude. Some monks think like that. Then, if you want to personify Kilesa, it's like you enter a knife fight, one-on-one. It's mortal hand-to-hand combat, and the best one survives. Strangle and stab those Kilesas. It's serious business. If Kilesas are still present, a real meditator won't allow those defilements to get involved in society. It just creates turmoil and disturbance. So the Kruba Ajahns sought solitude, retreating to peaceful, quiet places. They lived in forests, mountains, and caves. They dwelt in isolation and developed bhavana, not allowing their hearts to waver and lead them back into society. Getting involved in society is just taking one's kilesas to go bother other people and create civic havoc. So the Kruba Ajahns withdrew to remote locations. "I'd like to have my monks dwelling in solitude as well, so there's not much to do in this monastery besides developing bhavana. I've cut the commitments outside the monastery down to the minimum. I feel this is more beneficial than getting drawn out by external business and distracted by those outside events. Such distractions won't do meditators any good. Don't forget why you've taken up these brown robes. Why do you go forth from the world to ordain? Why did you don these robes? We took up wearing these three robes in order to practice Dhamma for the ending of all dukkha, for the cessation of dukkha, not for praise, fame, and comfort. We wear these robes for the ending and cessation of dukkha. They are the victory banners of the arhats. But 90% of those who ordain forget this. They lose the spirit. After being ordained for a while, they become indulgent. They forget, they eat, then sleep, and don't put forth effort into their Dhamma practice. Their effort wanes. Wherever there's a ceremony happening, they go off to boisterously socialize and mingle with their friends. This is the way of the world, distraction and chaos. Then they get involved with building and forget themselves, totally losing perspective. They build things that are way out of proportion to what's appropriate, forgetting when to stop when it's just enough. Their desire knows no limits. They're just competing with the world. They forget themselves, forget why they ordained. Now that we're monastics, how are we going to spend our time? Building or bhavana? Which are we going to do? Did we ordain to get caught up in external events and activities? To become monks who give great Dhamma talks? To become abbots? To get distracted by external burdens in order to get the lay people to have faith in us? To go and bother lay people? Some monks think so. So contemplate your original motivation in ordaining. You've come all the way to Thailand from overseas in order to learn about Buddhism, to study the teachings of the Buddha and Lumpa Cha. That took earnest dedication. So now that you're here, take the practice seriously. Have the attitude. Even if no one else is practicing, it doesn't matter. I'm going to practice. I'm going to do it right here. From the bottom of my heart, I vow to renounce kilesas. When you are tired, weak, or exhausted, okay, take a rest, but make sure mindfulness remains continuously vigilant. Rest with the attitude of getting up soon to continue wrestling with kilesas. When the body is tired, then sleep. And as soon as you get up, start putting forth effort into the battle with kilesa. Sleep to prepare for battle. not on and on with no end in sight. Sleep to refresh and invigorate the body and mind for the purpose of eradicating kilesa. Always keep this in mind. It's incumbent upon you to vanquish those kilesas in your heart. Essential desire present? If so, find a way, find a means to abandon it. Is anger or irritation present? If so, find a way to free the heart from it. Don't hold on to and repress it. Find a skillful means to eliminate it. If today, for example, you feel irritated, use mindfulness and samadhi to look for a means to cleanse the heart of that kilesa. Not holding on to and possessing that emotion, inquire into it. Develop metta while practicing sitting and walking meditation until the irritation has finally subsided. Don't allow it to persist in the heart until tonight. Once we lay down to sleep, there mustn't be any defiled emotions lingering to spend the night. Make the heart empty and free from all emotions, free from all the emotions that have been accumulating throughout the day. Clear them all out. Find ways to cleanse and wash them out, steadily carrying on. However many defiled emotions appear and get stuck on you throughout the day, keep inquiring into each of them. That way, when it's time to lie down to sleep, there's only the theme of meditation remaining in the heart. Or do a subha contemplation at that time, visualizing yourself as a corpse. Real meditators put forth effort in every posture. Even when they lay down to rest, they contemplate their body as if it were a corpse. They sustain keen awareness on their breathing or reflect on the Buddha. Then as soon as they wake up, they mindfully begin watching over their heart. In every posture and activity throughout the day, mindfulness and samadhi proceed to develop continuity. All day, all night, every day, and every night, make the awareness constant. Then you'll be radiantly happy in the Buddha's Dhamma. You then begin to understand and see what the Dhamma is all about. You'll be radiantly happy as you strive and persevere. That's how it is for real meditators. For bringing up the spirit of a warrior, contemplating of death is of central importance. When analyzing death, you see there's really nothing here, there. Imagining death spurs us on to increased diligence and persistence. When the Buddha queried his disciples about their meditations on death, some responded that they reflected on it many times a day, some 100, some 1,000 times a day, but the Buddha still reprimanded them for being laxed. Lax. One who is truly contemplating death contemplates with each inhalation and exhalation. Death for him was mindfulness every moment. But those of us who lose our mindfulness need to remind ourselves of the inevitability of death so that the mindfulness might achieve sustained continuity. If the Buddha reprimanded those monks for being lax, what about the likes of us, daydreaming about where we're going to go develop bhavana next year? After the range retreat, I'm going to go meditate at that place. Next year, I'm going to spend the range retreat at such and such a monastery. This year's range retreat hasn't even started, and already some people are thinking about where they're going to go after the retreat. Such distracted thinking drags them from place to place, so it has to be continually cut off. Contemplate death so the mind becomes rooted in the present. If the effort you put into meditation is not yet consistent, then you should devise a schedule for yourself, especially for those monks and novices who are newly ordained and haven't yet developed inner discipline. A schedule for practice is advisable. Even if you're feeling lazy, when it's time to do walking meditation, you walk. When it's time to do sitting meditation, you sit. Once you develop inner discipline, then focus on maintaining constant mindfulness in every posture and activity, standing, walking, sitting, or lying down. Whenever mindfulness slips, then focus again on the subject or theme of meditation. Continually refocusing with mindfulness and samadhi, the mind's defiled emotions are gradually reduced. The heart is freed from emotions, thoughts are freed from emotions, and they steadily decrease. When the heart is empty of defiled emotions, mindfulness becomes established in the present. With awareness sustained on the heart, whenever a kilesa surfaces, it's seen and recognized. Wisdom then has the means to eliminate it. Young monks and novices who are just beginning Dhamma practice, or those monks who've been around for a long time, but whose samadhi is not yet continuous and balanced, should go do a great deal of sitting and walking meditation, develop some samadhi, then you can grab hold of kilesas. Kilesas are like a cobra. Like a cobra the size of your arm, a venomous viper. Samadhi is like a hand that grabs the snake by the neck and holds it fast at arm's length. But samadhi doesn't have the strength to strangle the cobra to death. The strength one derives from samadhi doesn't have the ability to kill the kilesas. However, it can hold the cobra at bay so it doesn't bite you. Without samadhi, kilesas just repeatedly strike, strike, and strike, leaving you wounded and in pain. Samadhi holds the cobra by the neck, but it's a huge snake. No matter how you try to squeeze its neck, it won't die. It's powerful and fatter than your fingers can reach around, so you hold the cobra at a safe distance. Meanwhile, your other hand gropes for a knife or stick to whack it on the head. This is wisdom, panya. One hand holds the snake while the other searches for a weapon to kill it. Panya contemplates and analyzes in order to rid the heart of kilesas once and for all.